Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I am your host, Katya Allison. So what have you gotten yourself into together? Wow, that was a mouthful. We're decoding marketing to make it accessible for everyone, cut through the BS, and get down to the nitty-gritty. In each episode, you are going to walk away with a nugget or an insight that you can bring into your professional and, dare I say, sometimes even your personal life. So stick around and take a listen to all the knowledge bombs that are being dropped in every episode. And in today's episode, my guest is Gwen Hams. She's the co-CEO of CRO Metrics, a growth marketing powerhouse behind some of the most impactful digital transformations for brands like Google, Bombas, just to name a few. Now, before stepping into this role, she led a high-performing team at global creative agencies like Ogilvy, working on major accounts. And with all that insight, she drops some knowledge bombs in this episode. We unpack what it means to market in uncertain times, from AI integration and performance marketing to change management and creative innovation, from 9/11 to tariffs. I know, that's a full swing. She shares a perspective that is both strategic and very deeply human, opening up about what it really takes to lead during volatility, how she helps brands thrive through experimentation, and why focusing on measurable results is a non-negotiable in today's world. Plus, she offers some wisdom on staying curious, embracing imagination, and leading with clarity, even in chaos. So if you've ever wondered how to balance bold marketing with grounded leadership, you're going to want to keep listening. Grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Gwen, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. I am very excited to have you on here as a guest. We're going to dive into living in these times of uncertainty and kind of what that means from a marketing perspective. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
Now, I always like to start the podcast off with my audience getting to know you a little bit and just kind of understanding your journey as a marketer. So let's start with the easy questions. What was your first marketing role, whether it had marketing in the title or it didn't?
Yeah. So I started in the creative agency side of advertising within marketing. And essentially what my job was, I was an assistant account executive on a global piece of business. And so my job was to connect the different assets around the globe. And so as we think about now of like scale content production and everything is happening digitally and through AI and automation, well, back in the day, there were people like me that were literally shipping masters from one country to another so they could be adopted and adapted and drive global scale.
Well, I can imagine the change that you've also seen in your career, if that's where you started. Now, that is where you started. Where are you at now? What are you doing?
Yeah. So now I'm the co-CEO of Crometrics. And so we are a growth marketing agency that really focuses on optimizing the digital consumer experience. So making things easier, making things better, and driving more value for our clients.
That is amazing. What is it that you love about what you do? But be prepared, with a good comes the bad. Yes. I'm going to want to know, if I had my magic wand, what could I remove from your day-to-day job? But let's start with the positive. What is it that you love about what you're currently doing?
Yeah. And so I joined Crometrics about 5.5 months ago. So still very new. But I think the thing that I love the most is, number one, is being able to see the tangible results of what we do and the impact on business. Again, coming from a creative agency world where it was a lot of like bigger strategies, driving brand equity, brand love, brand preference, the connectivity to those tangible business results were harder to get. And so I love being able to see, you know, what was a test that we ran? How did it perform? How are we scaling it? And really, it's like just a very gratifying type of a thing to say, there's a very clear line between what we're doing and what the outcomes are.
I think that as marketers, and I actually just happened to have this conversation today with an agency, we were kind of chatting through how marketing is usually the first area where they cut. Yep. And, you know, I've gone through 2 layoffs myself, and it doesn't matter how good you are and how much time, at the end of the day, it's a business decision. And so what it has taught me in my career is that you really do have to tie business impact of marketing initiatives in order to show the true value of it. So I don't know, this may seem overly dramatic to say, you know, so that you stay alive at the company, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, completely. And I think, you know, we're so much better off than we used to be, just in terms of being able to have the data and the analytics and the data scientists and try to be able to connect all those things together. But, you know, there's that like age old saying of like, if you can't measure it, you know, does it really count kind of a thing? And so that just becomes, I think, more and more important. I also think, you know, talking to CMOs, like the amount of pressure that they have from their CEOs, CFOs to show those tangible results in a shorter amount of time is just greater and greater. And so I think as we're seeing that, you know, the shift of marketing, you know, there's always going to be this tension. And I don't think it's an either or of like, is it brand or is it performance? But how do those two things come together so that you're tangibly building the business while building brand preference and love and all of those, you know, like stickiness and memorability around it, so people are choosing you at shelf or at the digital shelf?
That is so true. You do have to be able to balance both of those things. Now, that's what you love and where you're at right now. I've got my magic wand now. What can I remove from your day?
Yeah. I think the thing that always, you know, it's probably something a lot of people feel is like, how can we move faster and make change faster? Because the reality is like, we are a people business. We have all the tech and we have the tools and we have AI and things like that. But at the end of the day, we're people. And so I always think about how can I bring along people to move more quickly? And sometimes you have an idea or there's an initiative and you see that energetic like momentum and that magnetism towards it. And you're like, wow, things just all of a sudden happened. There's other things that I call like eating your vegetables that are harder to get people over the hump and harder to get people there. And, you know, so for me, where I like to believe I can see where I want to get us and I can see what needs to be true to get there. It's like, how do we just move faster? How do we bring people along so that they're really kind of the momentum and making it happen together?
What are some of the vegetables that you find
there's so
are
many
hard
vegetables.
For people to get over? Well, Your most recent one.
Yes. Well, so it was funny. We were working with a client and we're actually helping them kind of set up their whole experimentation arm. So kind of taking, you know, moving into more performance-based or kind of bringing that muscle together. And we had this big conversation about change management. And I am fascinated by human beings. Like, we are complex, we're irrational, we're wild. And so I was like, why is it called change management? But two, like, why is it so hard? And so I like dug in and I found this this study basically saying that when people hear the word change, it triggers their amygdala in their brain, which is really like the fight or flight reflex. Mm-hmm. And so people literally have like a neurological resistance to the word change. And so, you know, whether you use other words to kind of get over it, but I also think it's something of like, how do we meet people where they are and understand like, what are the barriers? And therefore, like, what are those micro steps that we can help them like start to make progress in the right direction? And, you know, again, everybody's a little bit different. Everybody's on a different path of their journey. But I think I've found like when we can identify what those things are and again, just start a little bit of momentum, all of a sudden moves into bigger momentum and you're able to kind of get that change going and get it to stick.
Oh, that's so true. I feel like we could probably have a whole podcast on change management. So if you want to come back and we could talk about that, that would be huge. Because I think like, and it's been also my experience that like the longer people have done something, the harder that word and more like intense the word change is. And while we know that changing can be incredibly impactful for the business, that doesn't change that neurological like knee jerk that people have, right? Like, science is science. My body is going to react the way that it's going to react. So it is really interesting to see that, man. If I had a wand, I would also wave it towards that as well too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now, being in the business that you're at, I would imagine, like all any marketer, we have to be able to stay up to date with what's going on and how that could impact our business as well, too. So how are you staying up to date with kind of, I don't want to say trends because I feel like that's a triggering word for people. I think they think I'm like talking about a TikTok dance, but it is really of like, how are you keeping in the loop of what's going on and how that can affect just the things that you even tell your clients that you should be moving forward with? Are there newsletters, books, podcasts? Like where? How are you doing?
So I would say it's kind of like all the things. And what took me a very long time to figure out was like how to actually integrate them into my life versus I think all of us, you know, we have on our to-do list, like, you know, read that newsletter or check this thing or listen to that podcast. And that's really hard to do. So I'm a big like habit stacker and I try to almost like use some of the behavioral science principles on myself. So some things that I listen to, like I'm big into walking. I'm doing less 100 miles of summer. So I listen to like the Acquired podcast and that gives me like broad, deep overviews of different companies, categories, what's happening. And that's kind of like just food for my business soul, if you will.
Yeah.
The place that I love is like I've kind of hijacked my Instagram feed. So sure, I get some of the personal stuff, but I get a lot of like business news. I still follow a lot of like the, you know, creativity. So whether it's, you know, like The Drum or Adweek or AdAge, Wall Street Journal, I have my, you know, news on my Apple app that like sends me push notifications so that I'm not the one that has to like always go to look for it, but it's coming to me. And then one of my favorite places is Reddit. Anytime I am like you just find fascinating things about human behavior, about preferences, about like trends that you wouldn't even think about. So just putting in like an easy search, you know, we do it about like all of our clients or, you know, what are different things going on that you can kind of get deep into these subcultures, which is amazing. And then obviously TikTok, right? That's where kind of everything is happening and you're seeing it. But I do say like, I like to dabble in a bunch of different places because you want kind of those authoritative sources, but you also want to get that pulse on like what's happening with culture, which is interesting. So for instance, like today, Lowe's just announced that they're doing a partnership with Mr. Beast. And I told my kids, teenagers, and it's like, Mr. Beast has been in their world now for years. And I feel like the adults are just coming around to the power of somebody like him. But I always like to think like, well, I knew about Mr. Beast, you know, before he really made it big because I have kids that I'm, you know, very connected into and learning from them as well on what's happening in culture.
Well, and I think that's also why I really like to ask the question because one, you know, you'll eventually get like a newsletter or podcast that other people can follow as well too. But it is like, if you're not exposed to different things, then you're not really keeping up and you have to be able to do that to be effective in business and effective in marketing. You have to know how people are consuming content because you're trying to get their attention with what content, right? Like that's where you have to really be creative. And one thing that I want to point out that you said that I'm obsessed with is that you said that you've hacked your Instagram feed. And I think that is such a miss for people. That's such a miss for people. My husband's always like, oh, you know, TikTok is listening, Instagram is listening, Facebook is listening. And I make it work for me. Yes, I do. Yeah. I want to see more of this. It's right next to my phone. It's going to come up on my feed. Like it's that hacking into it that you're talking about that I totally love.
Yes. And I love this notion of like pushing towards people. It's kind of like, remember when websites started and then it was kind of like, if we build it, they will come mentality. And then all of a sudden everybody had all these websites and surprise, like nobody was going to them because they didn't know they existed. It's like, oh, and then that's when, you know, paid advertising and all this stuff kind of came to be. And so I always think about it that way. Like, I'm not going to have the mind space to be like, now I want to go and look for this thing. So how do I get it just coming to me automatically?
Yeah, absolutely. You're too far down the funnel. You're too far down the funnel if you're waiting for someone to like need you as their solution for really anything.
Totally.
Okay, I'm ready to dive into it. Yeah. Let's talk marketing because, see, I could have gotten lost on the entire first part of it, but I do want to talk marketing. And what we're really going to dive into today is just kind of growth in this sort of world of uncertainty as marketers, as business owners. What does this look like? But before we really dive into this nitty gritty, before you hopped on, we were talking about 9/11. And the job fair that you went to, definitely can unpack that too. But I want us to define, what do we mean by like this uncertain times?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's for me, and again, it kind of connects back to what we were talking about of people's, you know, physical reaction almost to the word change. And so anytime that you are, and there's, you know, like little bit of uncertainty and a lot of bit of uncertainty, and whether that's happening from, you know, a geopolitical standpoint, that's happening from a social standpoint, that's happening from, you know, a community standpoint or a personal standpoint. Those are all moments where, again, people kind of clam up and there's this sense of kind of resisting it. And I think what I've seen, and, you know, just sharing that story of my senior year in college, when we had our first kind of job fair of the year was on 9/11, was that afternoon. And nobody had ever experienced anything like it. And so people didn't know we should have had that canceled. And it wasn't. We all dressed up in our suits and we went to the job fair. And it was, you know, one of the most odd days to begin with of my life.
I was going to say it was awkward. Yeah,
compounded by all of us dressed up in suits for the first time. And recruiters saying, we don't know if we had a job. But it's an interesting thing when you think about what uncertainty means, what change means. And it is a very personal thing because some people are very resilient and can roll with it. And other people take even the smallest bit of uncertainty and it really kind of paralyzes them.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, 9/11 was such a big one. And obviously, like the most recent one is what I would say is our reactions to COVID, what life looks like now, it's very different. So it's impacted business in a completely different way. You had mentioned, you know, after 9/11, we realize, oh, you should stop business.
Right.
It's lesson learned, right? And through COVID, now there's remote working, but we're consuming content differently. There's the word authenticity is overused. I certainly overuse it, but there's no other word that kind of fills that gap. How do you think that businesses and marketers are reacting now kind of in this post-COVID, because that those were uncertain times, and kind of what directions did it lead us?
Yeah, I think it leaned us in a few ways. I mean, the first one I say is like, I still actually think, you know, 5 years later, we're still in a COVID hangover. You know, it's like, we're still figuring out how to be social beings again, how to interact, how to, you know, in some cases, you know, be respectful and things like that. But that's kind of, I think the first thing is like, we also have to give ourselves a little bit of grace that like that was mind, body, spiritually altering for all of us. And like, it's going to take a minute to get back to normal. If we'll ever get back to normal, I think it's more of like what that
new normal, right?
Yeah. But I think coming out of it, you know, what I am seeing is there's kind of two paths. There's the people that have gone, you know, very conservative of, we don't know what's going to happen. And so we're going to take kind of tiny steps forward. And then the people that have said, you know what, like, this is our opportunity. We're going to go seize it. And they're taking bigger and bigger swings. And I think that's where, for me, I'm more on the, like, how do you take some of those bigger swings in not a reckless way, but in an informed way? Because at the end of the day, you know, this, again, I go back to people, like, this world works on people. And, you know, we all have kind of the power of AI that we're integrating into our day-to-day lives. But at the end of the day, it's to support people and to do things better and easier and faster. But also at some point, people are going to say, hey, you know what? I love food. I love restaurants. I don't want AI just to tell me where I should go. I want to see all the pictures. I want to read all the reviews. And like, that experience, I think, is going to play a role for some people. Whereas for me, I'll be like, please just give me a recommendation and make the reservation and I'll be all set. Right. And so I think we're going to be going through a bit of this adoption too. And again, that creates a lot of space for innovation and for how do we meet people where they are on that journey from a big swing standpoint, but also, you know, recognizing some people are going to have to take a little bit more baby steps, and that's okay too. So what needs to be true for them as well?
Yeah, what I hear you saying is it's almost equivalent to a little bit of this choose your own adventure, right? We talk so much about personalization, and maybe that is that level of personalization that we need. Like, how do I, the food is a great example, right? You may want to just tell me the best places to eat. And then there's like, you know, I look at my husband who loves to watch videos.
Yes. Yes.
For like, you know, of different chefs going to different places of like the best barbecue spots. And he needs to watch 20 of these videos before we even book the trip. And then he needs to, you know, read the reviews of all of the stuff, you know what I mean? But that's like his adventure. And I probably lean more towards you of like, okay, well, what are the top 10?
Yeah.
And what is it? What should I get that I like from there? But it does sound to me a little bit like we are leaning on personalization, and we are going to a more choose your own adventure, because maybe that's the way we adapt to uncertainty, because it's almost like we haven't settled yet. So we kind of want all of our options. I don't know if that makes sense.
I think it totally does. And I also think it's like, it makes us think about like where our value lies, right? So like I was having a conversation with a former colleague of mine who now works in at one of the big QSR brands. And he was telling me that he was at the National Restaurant Association conference. And he was like, it's wild seeing, you know, like they're going to be having robots making all of our food. And then we started talking about that of like, well, maybe that's okay if you want a quick lunch or pizza. But you'd probably pay more. You'd put more value on for a nice dinner where you can actually see the people that are putting the love and the care and the thoughtfulness into every, you know, every ingredient and every component of that meal. And so I think to your point, it's like, it's also going to make us think about the value of those things and what we're willing to pay for or not, or spend our time on or not. And I think that's going to be like one of our almost like next frontier as human beings, because there is going to be a bit of that choice that we'll, you know, have to navigate through for each one of us.
Now, I totally agree. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's so much more of an emphasis on values nowadays versus this, and you know, speaking specifically from like a marketing perspective, this is my ideal buyer persona that has all of these demographics and firmographics. There is a whole other value graphics, great book from David Allison, who wrote value graphics that I think has become even more relevant now as we weather uncertainty. And we just talked about like really big pieces, right? Like we talked about 9/11, we talked about COVID. Those are monsters, I feel like. But then there are other things that big or small, but like even the tariffs right now, the uncertainty of tariffs, and what does that do for businesses? And what does that mean from like a marketing perspective? Yeah. I'd love to get your thoughts on that level of uncertainty and the impact to business and to marketing teams.
Yeah. So what I'm seeing firsthand is there's a lot of this, like, we're waiting and we're seeing. So like even from, you know, it's like the clients that we have, it's like business as usual. New business is, it's not stopping it, but it's like pausing it, or it's slowing down because they're in this like wait and see type of a thing. Like, truly, is this going to happen? What is the impact? But then again, we have some other clients that are like, yeah, we have a calculator in place in case the tariffs do hit us, but like we're not slowing down because we have big ambitions and we have big objectives. And I think this is where I go back to those two paths. Like, you can just wait and see and kind of not take much action, or you can say, here's our strategy, here's our plan, our what is really solid. Maybe there's some of the how elements that we need to dial up or dial down based on the consumer behavior and what our consumer is facing. But we're not going to let something kind of just stand in our way from proceeding. So I think that's kind of like the first piece that I'm seeing. I think the second one, which is, you know, where I think everyone gets nervous, and I go back to like, what's the opportunity, is you have two things that are happening. What, number one is, if the tariffs really do come in, you know, we all are anticipating prices are going to increase, while also you're going to be having, you know, the spending power is going to just be going down because of, you know, companies contracting, whether it's layoffs or furloughs or just uncertainty, you kind of start seeing that people start tightening their belt. And so with that, you have to say, okay, well, what are those consumer behaviors that are going to change? And how is we as a company or a brand can be there for them in new ways, in different ways, and meeting them kind of where they are? And so, you know, it's an interesting thing as you start to kind of look at what are some of the brands that are able to kind of like weather through that. So, you know, I mentioned Lowe's before, and like, it's interesting because people aren't spending money on their houses and their home improvement like they did during the pandemic, right? Everybody was at home looking at their place being like, oh my gosh, this needs a refresh. Get me out of here. Well, they're saying, okay, people aren't doing that, but how do we win the next generation of homeowners that haven't even signed a mortgage yet? So I think that's an interesting one. I also think about a brand just recently. I don't know how much you follow like Dude Wipes. They are a, you know.
I totally follow Dude Wipes.
Oh my God.
I didn't know what you were going to say, but I love the fact that you said Dude Wipes.
they're a Chicago startup. They're killing it. They're doing amazing. And it's fascinating because they just shared that they now are doing a pilot with Walmart where they are on the shelf next to baby wipes, which is fascinating because it's like baby wipes has nothing to do with, where the toilet paper section is and the wipe section is. But it makes sense because from a consumer behavior standpoint, as you know, my deep Reddit searches uncover, a lot of people that are not babies do use baby wipes. So all of a sudden you have, you know, you're meeting people where they are, you're giving them an alternative. You're not stopping and saying, oh my goodness, there's tariffs looming, there's uncertainty looming, I'm not going to kind of put myself out there, but they're going against big toilet paper in really creative, scrappy ways, and they're able to do it with a partner like Walmart. I mean, that's incredible in 2025 to see.
Yeah, you really do have to start thinking outside of the box. And I like what you said about meeting people where they are at and what they are doing and taking swings like that. You know, taking swings like that, I think, are really huge. There is the I believe it's Hanes, the ad that just came out, the Bonds underwear from Australia that just launched in the US, right? And this cheekiness of like what they're advertising as well too, of like, why are they so comfortable? And they've got all, I don't know if you've seen those ads, but now I've gone down the rabbit hole of those. I'm like, this is so clever. And this is how it's like living with a marketer, right? I mean, like I'm consuming those things and I'm like, those things pair so well because I look at this tarantula and I have a actual physical reaction of the idea of that. And they are so chill. So they're like, they're playing with the emotions, taking a swing of like, how can we, you know, how can we really launch this into the US from a completely different country? So I love creative marketing in that way as well too.
And I think it's a great example because also as, you know, as budgets are, you know, are under scrutiny or some cases are being pulled back and people are like, oh, how do we become more safe? It's actually that time when you have to be even more bold, right?
Yeah.
And take those bigger swings because it's like you have to get your marketing dollars to go further, to drive that earned media, to drive that buzz, to drive, you know, again, that we're talking about it right here. Like, that wouldn't have happened if they were just doing a kind of run of your mill type of a campaign, right?
Yeah, you've got to be able to stand out.
Yes. Yeah.
So we've talked about just kind of from a business perspective, we talked about being, you know, creative with marketing during uncertain times, big and small times. Now I kind of want to switch hats a little bit because you do have a creative agency background. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this evolution of, you know, uncertainty and what it does to an agency and how and why a marketer should know that. That's too many questions in one.
Yeah.
So let's start with like the impact of these kind of uncertain times or uncertainty in general and the impact to agencies themselves. What kind of changes can we see?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's three things. The first one, and you know, you'd kind of mentioned it earlier on. It's like if marketing is the first one to feel it on the way down and the last one to feel it on the way up, agencies are usually like riding along there with them.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a reality to that. And you know, obviously it's been a topic for years of budgets are decreasing, clients are asking to do more with less and all of that kind of stuff. So I think that's always going to be a reality. And you know, that's where like, what's the value equation of what agencies are bringing? How are we showing that value? How are we showing the tangible impact? Because those are the ways to have, you know, not just kind of qualitative, you know, opinion-based conversations, but really make it quantitative. So I think that's number one. I think the second one are those agencies that really are kind of at the tip of the spear to say, how are we leveraging data, technology, like connection across the consumer experience and what that means in a most modern way. And so, you know, I always have these red flags on like when there's resistance to technology or to AI or to something, I always want to be like, why? Right? It's like, how do we use it? How do we use it for good? How do we have it as a tool? It's a tool in our toolbox. It's not the end all be all. I still believe like the human imagination is the best technology we have there. And my hope is, you know, where we are in 10, 20, 50 years is like, it's making us as mankind more, you know, better, more innovative, more cutting edge, you know, solving the world's biggest problems in really creative ways and using the tools to help us get there versus kind of the other way around. And then I think three is like, I kind of call this a bit of like the steel stomach of leadership. That's maybe a little bit aggressive or too much, but you know, one of the challenges, and we face this too. Granted, I'm relatively new in my role as co-CEO of Crometrics, but is, you know, how do we hold true to what are our priorities? What is our strategy? Like that is very steeped in consumers at the end of the day. That's who, you know, that's who we're trying to connect with, whether it's B2B, B2C clients. What is going to add the most value to our clients and put their business first? And when we can have that steel stomach and not get rattled and say, oh my gosh, well, wait a minute, this is happening. So now we're going to head in this direction. And then all of a sudden you're in the, you know, going to the left instead of the right. And it becomes almost like we've all seen that, right? The whiplash strategy. And that's, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's easy because people are looking for results and they're looking for action and they're looking for impact. And so there's a lot of organizations that have fallen in the trap of this whiplash strategy instead of the leadership really saying like, okay, how are we going to have, I call it like the steel stomach, like, and we believe in this and maybe sure we need to move some of the dials up or down or sideways, but the core of what it is has been built on a really solid foundation, built on a mix of, again, all of these like data and needs and wants of consumers and the marketplace and our expertise that we're not going to, you know, just abandon ship and go in a different direction. And so I think when you have kind of like those three things together, you know, acknowledging the ups and downs of the industry and of, you know, the value equation, kind of leading from the front and defining your future by leveraging tools and technology, AI, all of that good stuff in service of something bigger. And then three, having kind of that steel stomach of leadership that keeps you grounded in the what you're trying to do and being able to kind of move the dials on the how to make sure you're doing it in the right way based on the situation, I think is what is key for agencies to succeed and weather these changes and also show leadership to your people and to your clients that like, we got this, right? A lot of it is the whole old pilot analogy of like, when you're going through turbulence and the pilot comes on and says, we're hitting a little turbulence, it's going to be okay. Just keep your seatbelts fastened. We're going to be good. Like you just sit back and you sigh a breath of relief.
Yeah, I love that analogy. And you're right. I think that as a marketer, when you partner with an agency, you're looking for a true partnership. And when you're bogged down, I think the frustrating part for me when working with other agencies is truly the amount of overhead that happens with agencies as well too. Like if there was a way that they could automate some of this stuff, leveraging AI, wouldn't that be a little bit more effective? And then it would keep my costs down and then I can do more, right? Because I think there's always this push to want to over deliver and provide all these really robust project plans for. These are like selling you the dream. That is way too much money. Never going to get this across. Like, but what value are you going to bring to me? Because I think like when you run your agency in these three kind of ways that you have pitched, I love those bullet points, and you pair it with a company that's looking for that as well too, then you're both working so well together and being efficient, because that is how you can extend your marketing team. Like I can only, I shouldn't say I can only run, but the to be able to run a small but mighty marketing team, you need to be able to have good contractors, good agency that you know they have your back. If they're nickel and diming you for everything, those values definitely don't align.
Right. Well, and you said it before, right? Of like the like, meet people where they are. It's also like meeting clients where they are and like really understanding like what is it that they need? What are the problems that they're trying to solve? And how can you do that in like a right-sized way to be able to get, you know, to the outcomes that you both endeavor to achieve?
Yeah, absolutely. And so we've talked a little bit about, well, we haven't really talked about AI. AI has been mentioned, but we've talked about, you know, like the technology and all of these kind of changes happening, and people, not everyone feels very comfortable with these types of changes. Now we want to be able to lean on technology, but we also want to be human, and we want people to feel that human side of us. So what is your advice for, yes, let me leverage technology and all of the innovation with, but keep me human, keep me feeling something. So you feel it as well too. So I'd love to hear your insights and advice for having that balance.
Yeah. And I think there's very much a continuum, right? Of like from what AI is primarily being used today, which is more of, you know, those like lower level tasks, more of the vegetable stuff, right? Like
the vegetables.
Let's get that off our plate to when it's, you know, it's becoming more predictive, or it's becoming kind of like that brainstorm partner and things like that. And it's only going to excel. The two things though, I think that we're never going to be able to replace, and this is where I get super excited, is that human connection, that person to person. It's interesting because I spend a lot of time with our clients, you know, getting on planes, hearing pilots tell me about turbulence.
Personal experience.
But it's fascinating because like I'm always so enthused after meeting with them, and like they're always just genuinely appreciative that I made the effort. And I think like, well, are people not making the effort? And I don't think they're making the effort like they did before COVID. So I think there's something really powerful about just that human connection, shared experience, sharing of ideas, perspectives, all that kind of stuff that's never going to be replaced. And then I know I said it before, but I also think about the human imagination. Like my hope for all of us with AI is that it pushes us to be more creative, to think about the what ifs, like what is the future? Because all of a sudden it's going to become easier, faster, you know, less tensions and barriers to create those things. I mean, you know, there's stories happening every day about now vibe coding and what you were able to create and how that helped you, you know, solve a problem that you never thought could be solved. You know, like you're doing it. You don't need a full suite of people to be able to do it. And so I'm like, that's awesome. Now, how do we think about what are those problems out in the world? What are those bigger ones? What are those gnarlier ones? Like where can we kind of get underneath them and use our imagination to think about like, what could that be? And then use technology in order to help us solve them.
Oh, not only using technology to help us solve them, but using technology so we have the brain space to come up with that, right? Because I always think that for me, that's always a challenging part. Like I can run really fast and I can do multiple things and I wear many hats, but sometimes I just want the time to think about a problem to see how I can solve it. It's the taking my dogs for a walk without headphones on to be like, just let your brain have the space. So I think that that is a good way to be able to balance, you know, with technology and innovation and then keeping it human. Make sure that you remember you are the human part of it.
Yes.
You are the human part of human. You've got to be able to connect.
Well, and to that point, like one of my favorite things to do, I don't do it as much as I should, but I will put that on my little list of like these micro steps I can take is daydreaming. Like we do a lot of road trips. My kids are in soccer, so we're in the car a ton. I love just daydreaming. And like if we could do more of that as a people, and again, not trying to solve all the world's problems, but just taking a break and letting your mind wander. It's kind of like, you know, the things you start thinking about when you're staring outside of a window on a road trip is like, I don't know. It's just, it resets you. It reinvigorates you in a way that.
Absolutely. We have to bring wonder back into our life yes. in order to unlock something else that sometimes feels like it was lost a little bit.
Yes, totally.
Now, I've got a final question for you. Now, the final question is, if you knew then what you know now, what is your marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
Okay. So this is a quote from my mom that was like a very practical quote at the time. And I'll tell you what it is, and then I'll tell you the story. So it's, don't bring more than you can carry. And it was literally when I was studying abroad and I had, you know, two suitcases and a big backpack and all that stuff. And she was just like, just remember, like you have to carry all this stuff. Don't bring more. Don't bring, you know, four bags or whatever that is. But it's been something that's really stuck with me because I think sometimes we as people and we as marketers think like more is more. And there is something to be said about focusing and editing and like and understanding what can your team carry, right? Like don't give them a ton mm-hmm. of stuff that they can't do that overwhelms them, that makes them, you know, work every night and every weekend. Like that is a bad situation. Don't be in, you know, 3 million different places with a teeny tiny, you know, the peanut butter analogy when you're going out to market and you're trying to, you know, drive your business results through marketing. Like, don't overload yourself, right? As I'm a working mom. And so I'm constantly, you know, have spinning plates, but I always kind of go back to that on multiple levels because it's like such a, it came from such a practical piece of advice and suggestion, but I keep going back to that because sometimes like when we are overwhelmed or when you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm under a mountain of pressure, mm-hmm. it's almost like, okay, I'm bringing more than I can carry. All right. What do I need to kind of push off or delegate or reprioritize, or what do I need to do for myself, for my team, for my clients, for kind of my broader, you know, community. And I don't know, that's been my go-to that just kind of keeps me grounded and keeps me focused on the things that really matter.
It's definitely going to keep me grounded. Don't bring more than you can carry is applicable in so many ways. And I think for me, when I hear you say that, it's not even just the actual like carrying, it's don't bring more than you can carry. That mountain of work, that mountain of worry, you have brought that on to yourself. And sometimes for me, I feel like that's the harder thing to acknowledge. Like, oh, I did this to myself.
Yeah, right.
I overextended myself.
I said yes to everything.
Yeah, I said yes to everything. And you're right, now I gotta delegate or say no or give different timelines. Or dare I say, like, adjust.
Right.
And be realistic because you are only human and you should. I mean, that's just the best advice. So tell your mom that I say thank you. And thank you so much for sharing everything that you shared. And it was just an overall such a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This was a
Thanks for tuning in. Now it's key takeaway time, and I have some powerful key takeaways from the conversation that I'd like to share. Number one, first up, value graphics are greater than demographics. Now, in the conversation, we reframed how we think about our audience. Gwen really reminded us that in uncertain times, marketers need to go deeper than demographics. Or honestly, even psychographics. It's about values, what matters to people, what they believe in, what motivates behavior at a very foundational level. I referenced the work of David Allison and his book, Value Graphics. I couldn't agree more with how relevant it is right now. She said that there is so much more of an emphasis on values nowadays in marketing. we used to talk about this ideal buyer persona, which I'm going to be honest with you, I still do. But how I talk about it is slightly different. I need to know who I'm talking to so that I can better understand their values. What is important to them? And how can I frame my messaging around that? And change the narrative from being overly salesy to value-based. Because in this climate, people aren't just making decisions based on their income, age, or geography. Wouldn't that be easy? They're really navigating uncertainty just like we are. And that means personalization isn't about slick AI tools or perfect segmentation. It's about empathy and understanding whether your audience craves security or novelty, connection, or autonomy. And building your messaging around that, if we can stop thinking like advertisers and start thinking like anthropologists, we'll be better equipped to really adapt with our audiences instead of constantly reacting to them. That's the power of values first approach. Next, the two paths of change management. Now, Gwen introduced sort of framework that I've already bookmarked in my brain. When faced with uncertainty, businesses often follow one of two paths when it comes to change management. Some pull back, play it safe, and move forward incrementally. Others lean into the ambiguity and take bold, informed swings. Honestly, the spectrum is sit and wait to swing to the fences. Now, this isn't about saying one approach is better than the other, because truthfully, both have been successful for brands. But what I do think is that you have to evaluate that as a brand, who are you? Where do you fall in that spectrum? Decide where you sit. It is about clarity, the need for businesses to know why they're choosing the path they're on. Are you pausing because of fear, or are you being strategic? Are you swinging big because of opportunity or out of desperation? The example that she shared was how some brands are preparing for potential tariff impacts by building financial models, but they're still charging forward. They're not waiting for stability or to know. They're planning through instability. It reminded me that change management isn't just a process. It really is a mindset. Recognizing that every organization has a tolerance for uncertainty, but successful ones don't let it stall them out. They adapt to the how without losing sight of the why. Now, that's how you lead through uncertainty, not around it. And finally, beware the whiplash strategy. A new term I learned and I am now obsessed with, the whiplash strategy. If you've ever worked in marketing org that is constantly shifting directions based on the latest headline or trend, you know exactly what she and I are talking about here. She called it out clearly. When strategies constantly shift in reaction to every external event, all of a sudden you're going left instead of right, and it becomes almost like whiplash. Now, what's the antidote? What she calls a steel stomach leadership. It is not about being inflexible. It's about anchoring your strategy in something solid. Consumer needs, core business goals, data-backed insights, and being willing to adjust without abandoning your direction. I love how she connected this to a pilot in turbulence analogy. If the pilot comes on the intercom and says, "We're hitting a bit of rough air, but we've got this," everyone relaxes. That's exactly the kind of presence leaders need to offer during marketing chaos, and honestly, any chaos. Because if you test the waters, people will match your crazy. Because the truth is, if your team or your clients feel you're being reactionary or inconsistent, trust erodes fast. But if they see you holding the line, with flexibility, not flailing, basically not being chicken little, they're going to follow you. Steel stomach leadership is about creating that calm in the storm. So if you take anything away from today's episode, let it be these three things. Know what your audience values are, not just what they buy. Choose your path through change with intention, not impulse. And number three, when the turbulence hits, be the kind of leader people trust to fly that plane. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike, and thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya signing off.